Greetings in the name of Jesus this morning. We are ready for Christian Virtues number 3. And I guess it's the way life has it, but we were missed last Sunday, obviously, and I did not tap into the system and listen to the message from last Sunday yet. Hopefully I can do that. When I looked ahead and counted and discovered that it was going to be my responsibility to preach on this set of virtues, well, hopefully you don't remember. That would be a blessing if you didn't remember that we just talked about stewardship back in February. I think I preached on it. And 3 years ago right now, I had a message specifically on contentment. And so it seems like, why did God want me to preach this again? But anyhow, I was again challenged to study the topic. And I probably will repeat some of the things I've said before. And then we will also, let's read. I think we're just going to read this section in our decrees, starting at page 11 and reading into page 12. Contentment and stewardship. Verses in Luke, Matthew 6, and Hebrews 13 are printed here. Now going into the text, we recognize that all earthly possessions belong to God, Genesis 14. Therefore, we are stewards, not owners of these material goods, Psalm 50. The threat of materialism is a serious challenge to true spirituality in our day. We sense this in a keen way when we compare the warnings against seeking riches in the New Testament and the materialistic emphasis of seeking wealth and prosperity in our culture. When God blesses with added wealth, members are directed to find ways to share with others for the sake of the kingdom of heaven and avoid excessive accumulation of material wealth, 1 Timothy 6. The following guidelines are presented as a means of helping the believer sense when materialism is influencing him in a course away from God. Number one, when devotional life and the family altar are pushed out of his schedule, one is busier than God ever intended him to be. Matthew 6. Number two, when disagreements over material possessions begin to cause strife, envy, or bitterness. Luke 12. Number three, when one begins to strap himself with debt in order to achieve a better lifestyle, Romans 13. Number four, when giving is done grudgingly so that more and more of one's finances are kept for self, 2 Corinthians 9. Number five, when one has an unthankful attitude toward present blessings and an unwholesome craving for more, 1 Timothy 6. Extravagance in any form is not consistent with the teachings of Scriptures. Therefore, we urge that our members refrain from useless and wasteful expenditures of money in their homes, on their persons, or in their living, and recommend that in all things they seek to give a good account of their stewardship as faithful servants of Christ, Luke 12 and Luke 16. Also, a year ago, I was assigned a message on materialism that I never preached here. So having said all that, I just told you that I preach 3 messages on this subject, and actually there's people that spend thousands of pages on this topic. So we are only going to skim the surface of this topic, number one. And number two, because of that, and maybe this is a blessing on the other hand, is that I just felt like we could not get as practical as what we really should because we don't have the time to spend on this topic. You know, another thing about contentment and stewardship, in difference to devotional life and love and compassion, is the Bible has very little good contained in it about contentment and stewardship, or things that just make us kind of warm up to the topic. And we're going to find that the Bible contains far more warnings on this topic than it does encouragements. As far as, you know, if you do this, then this will happen, and everything will be nice, and we'll feel good about it. And while that blessing does follow, there's a lot of the scriptures that are printed here, or the texts that are given, are warnings. Many of them are warnings and examples of what happened. And for a little while, I thought about just using the 5 points that are here as 5 points of the message, but we are not. I don't even know if I'm going to touch on all of them, because I don't think time is going to allow. But I'm going to say this now, and I'm going to say this at the end. Probably I'll repeat myself on this for sure. And that is, when considering this subject, love for and devotion to the Creator are the antidote for the negative results that the Bible warns about. And I had to look up the word to make sure I was using it right. Antidote is kind of like the thing that's given to someone for a poison, you know, to counteract a poison. And so I'm going to say again that love for and devotion to the Creator are the antidote for the negative results that the Bible warns about in this topic. Now, the virtue given is contentment and stewardship. And I, for a specific reason, we're going to look at stewardship first, because I believe that in order for us to understand contentment, we need to understand stewardship. And that was just back in February, so hopefully you've forgotten. But I think we're actually going to look at different verses than what we looked at in February. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time on stewardship. But turn to Psalm 50 a while. We're going to be turning to a lot of scripture. I may just turn there myself on some of them and read so that we can keep moving. And we may end up cutting some out. Psalm 50, and we're going to read verses 10 to 12 as we consider stewardship. For every beast of the forest is mine, and the cattle upon 1,000 hills. I know all the fowls of the mountains, and the wild beasts of the field are mine. If I were hungry, I would not tell thee. For the world is mine, and the fullness thereof. God shows the fact here, and it's supported in many other scriptures, of what I call creator ownership. That he, by virtue of creator, is owner. He is the commander. Verse 10, it says, is mine. Get the possessive. The side column of my Bible says divine ownership. Or what I call creator ownership. It says, is mine. Verse 12 says, the world is mine and the fullness thereof. And this is the same God who at times asks for sacrifices and offerings. And he says here that he doesn't need them. And if you look at prior verses, it supports that as well. He says, I will not reprove thee. But then in Psalm 51, the very next psalm, I didn't write down the verse, but he says, sacrifices and offerings... No, I'm going to quote the wrong verse, but he says, I don't need your burnt sacrifices, is what he's saying. I want obedience. I don't want your burnt sacrifices. But on the other hand, there are times that God created it, that God commanded this as creator, that they offer these burnt offerings and sacrifices. But he says here he doesn't need them because he is creator and he answers to no one. And I believe we can only understand stewardship when we understand and know the creator and understand creator ownership. Now, Colossians 1, 16 and 17. Colossians 1, verses 16 and 17. We're just breaking into a passage here. For by him were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible. Whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created by him and for him. And he is before all things, and by him all things consist. All things were created by him and for him. Again, you will not get stewardship unless you get it, that all things were created by him, that we get, but all things were created for him. Might be the one that's a little bit more hard. A little harder for us to actually, yes, we understand it, but to actually live it. It says, he is before all things. That means he is superior. Again, we understand that. Verse 17, he is superior in all things. And also it tells us that by him all things consist, which may be a little bit, maybe we don't understand what consist is. Maybe I don't understand. But consist means to set together, stand near, attend, or commend. And I don't have a good illustration for you other than, and I can't make up one. But when you think about an inventor that may have invented a piece of equipment or or some device that does something. And when you think about an inventor, when he goes to a trade show or whatever and he displays his invention and he operates this thing and he makes it work and he stands by and watches over it, and if any little hiccup happens, he knows exactly what to do to make it function properly. Now, I just pulled God down on the level of an inventor, but that's what exactly what by him all things consist means. He stands by, he operates it, he attends to it. It commends him, he commends it, the invention or the creature. And that's who the Creator is to us. By him all things consist. He is standing near, he is watching over, and knows how to tweak things as it operates. That is the Creator to the creature. Now the other verses that I will quote or try to quote, maybe I'll turn there. John 1:1-3, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. Again, an evidence that all things were made by him, the Creator, and without him there is nothing. Stewardship, as we said before, simply means caretaker. We are caretakers. What we have is not our own. And I wanted to say, before we even got started, because I didn't write it down, I forgot it, that this the way it's laid out in our decrees, these virtues, relates mainly to things, possessions, material wealth. But the principles start even before material things and material wealth. The principles of stewardship and contentment are in place, are happening, need to be happening in the heart before you ever see it on the outside. All right, so back to stewardship being a caretaker. What we have is not our own, and we are only taking care of them. But we are taking care of them for the one who owns them. And he owns them, why? Because he created them. The things that you have are not yours, really. They were created by God. And that goes right down to the clothing that you're wearing, up to the property that you call your own and that you take care of and that you make payments on and that you have purchased. Really, it is God's. You've used God's resources to buy it. A worthy steward will not neglect what he has been charged to take care of. And also Luke 19 with support, we're not going to turn there. We will give account to the master. As stewards, we will give account to the master as to how we took care of his things, and how we spent his money, and how we used his wealth and resources, and also I would say how we have used our lives, our energy, our waking hours, and you can add to that list. We're going to leave off with stewardship here, but I just wanted to lay out the principles, a few of the principles about stewardship, about creator ownership. Now moving on to contentment. Because if we don't grasp stewardship, we're never going to grasp contentment. Just like stewardship, contentment is much broader than things. And although the focus may be more on things, the principles apply to the heart of contentment as well as to its veins and arteries. When you think of contentment as being, it's everything that is connected to it. And the other thing I've discovered, probably it's no amazing discovery, but the topic of contentment, stewardship probably, but contentment even more so, will vary based on a person's personality. There's some people that I don't know why it is, are just naturally satisfied and contented, feel more sufficient with less than others. And I don't, if you have that figured out, I really would like to talk to you and understand it better. As you think about contentment and sufficiency, that's why if I were to study this before we had the first decree review, I know it's only a small thing, but stewardship is actually before contentment. Because if we fully understand or even in part understand that stewardship is a caretaker for God and His things, it will directly affect our contentment, because what we have has been given to us by God, and He has chosen to give us what He has given us. Content is an action verb. There is action here. Strong's would tell us it's the idea of raising up a barrier to ward off sufficient. I'm going to turn to Luke 12 and read verse 15. And I think we may come back to Luke 12 a little later on if we have time. Luke 12 and verse 15. And he said unto them, take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. And that's the words of Jesus, and they're not really that hard for us to understand. You know, the world around us very clearly understands, or they believe they understand, that life consists of what I can gather and what I can keep and what I can call my own. And Jesus says very plainly that take heed and beware of covetousness, because a man's life is not all about what he has. This verse did not use the word content, as I'm sure you heard, but it clearly shows the action verb. Remember, content is the idea of raising up a barrier. You will not be content. You know, Psalm says, be still and know that I am God. You will never be able to be still and know what contentment is, because contentment is an action verb. You will always, regardless of our personality, you always will need to have a degree of some action saying, no, I am right here and I'm satisfied. You will make a choice to be content. You will not just let contentment fall on you, because it is the idea of raising up a barrier, because covetousness is the opposite, or part of the opposite of it. I can't explain all that right now, but covetousness is what is going to be natural. Covetousness is natural to you and I. And we're going to talk about that, well, I guess we can right now. Covetousness, and I think the first time I heard this word was back at Shirksville, Brother Dwayne. Avarice, if I'm saying it right. I remember him saying that in a message. Avarice. And that's what Strong says covetousness is avarice, which the English dictionary would say it's excessive or insatiable desire for wealth or gain. Greediness. That's what covetousness is. Excessive or insatiable, which I think it means not able to be satisfied, desire for wealth or gain, greediness. He says, take heed and beware. Take heed means to stare at, to discern. You got to watch out for it. He's saying, watch out for covetousness. And then he says, beware, which is be on guard, because it's going to happen. It is happening. If you live and breathe and take on nourishment and have a sound mind, you will struggle. We do struggle with covetousness. Now, we've looked at the word covetous. Content we already looked at a little bit, but Strong's also uses the word self-complacent. The word self-complacent when it talks about contentment. Self-complacent, we think of complacency as a negative thing very many often. You say someone is complacent, you know, I always associate that as negative. But when we think about it in this way, marked by self-satisfaction, especially when accompanied by unawareness of actual dangers or deficiencies. So you don't need to, we can leave the actual dangers part out of it. Marked by self, and this is dictionary, marked by self-satisfaction, especially when accompanied by unawareness of deficiencies. We're going to talk a little bit more about deficiencies. Philippians 4 verse 11 says, not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. Verse 13, oh, I should turn there. Verse 13 is that verse that says, I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. And we often pull that verse out and just use it, but it is in the context of contentment. Or maybe I'm pulling it out. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased, I know how to be, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to be both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. The power to build the barrier of contentment comes from Christ. I don't think that's anything shocking or profound, but yes, it is profound, because we cannot build that barrier on our own strength. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I can only achieve contentment because of Jesus' power. Hebrews 13, verses 5 and 6. Again, to many of us, these may be familiar verses. Let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as ye have, for he hath said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee, so that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what man shall do unto me. Conversation means a mode or style without avarice, without that insatiable desire for greed, for gain and wealth, greediness. That's what contentment is. It's our mode of or style without avarice. It seems to me that from these verses, our temptation to discontentment is not because God has not given us enough. Where did I just read? Because he says, be content with such things as you have, and right in the same sentence, for he has said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. He has given us what we need. We are not discontent. It's not because God has not given us enough. It is because we look around and see what others have that I do not have. Or maybe that's just me. Maybe that's not you. And when I see that what others have that I don't have, I desire it. And as that desire grows, it receives more and more of my focus and attention, to the point where we start to push God out of the way because of our intense desire for something that, for whatever reason, he has not given us. I don't know if you followed through that. But we desire that thing more and more. We covet it. We are discontent. We want it. We want it bad because so-and-so has it. Whether it's ability, whether it's things, I don't care what it is, but we can desire it. And I think you know what I'm talking about. But if the avarice part of it is that insatiable desire, it keeps growing and growing, and God gets being pushed out farther and farther. And the reason we didn't have it in the first place is because he chose not to give it to us. You see how selfish, how idolatrous discontentment is. We begin to worship it rather than the Creator. And following a little bit further, discontentment, I believe, begets bitterness towards God and others. Because finally, if we don't get it, well, we aren't happy if we do get it, but if we don't get it, it turns us into bitter people towards God, who has treated us unfairly, which is what a discontent person says, and also toward others, which have what I really want and should have. And when this grows, God no longer receives our focus. And then we cannot say, back to verse 6, the Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what man shall do unto me. You cannot say that if God has treated you unfairly in your mind, because you have pushed him out. And this comes many times because what we have allowed man to do to us. Our discontentment comes because we have allowed. The Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what man shall do unto me. If you allow man to do what he has done, what he wants to do to you, or the evil one is create discontentment, the Lord will not be your helper. Now, I want to give you a personal illustration, which I think I did sometime before, so please, I'm sorry if I've done this too recently. And I learned a lesson on contentment in this situation, and I don't think I understood that I needed a lesson on contentment. In 2006, we traveled to Honduras. I know we didn't have enough money to do it, but we did it anyhow. We had enough money to pay for the tickets and go to Honduras for 9 or 10 days as a family. We had three children then, in 2006. And we had the privilege of going I say back because that's what they always say, back to El Naranjo, and I think a number of you have been there, a few of you. It's a three-hour trek from the home. Did I say trek? A ride, 2.5 to 3 hours, under good conditions. On the back of a small pickup, went back on a Sunday morning for Sunday morning services, and I don't know, Rodney might remember, there was probably at least 12 of us in the back of that truck. This little Toyota pickup, four-door, Teresa and some of the children rode inside with Philip and Karen, and we would never think about traveling 3 hours in the States like that. Number one, we don't have to, but number two, we just don't do that. But that kind of travel was bordering on luxury for a lot of them there, especially back in the village when we got back there. Because back in the village, I don't know if it's changed now, but 12 years ago, there was no electricity back in that village. There's the homes were, one or two rooms. I actually saw inside one, but I did not go into any of those homes. There's dirt floor. So I was beginning to think and be very thankful for what I had, even though we were living in a rented home, even though I had recently left an occupation that I strongly desired and enjoyed and wanted to and stay in it. And I had seeds or sprouts of discontentment. When I looked at what all the people did not have and what it did for me. The other thing was some of the one family that went back with us had baked a smoked chicken that morning, and I got to smell that the whole way back through. These 3 hours smelled this good food, and I knew that there was a small lunch packed for us of cold sandwiches, which I was okay with that. That was food to eat. But they went off in a native's home and ate their Sunday dinner, and we stayed at the church because there was an afternoon service, and we had our thermos there packed with, or our cooler packed with sandwiches, and they packed extra because they said, there's likely going to be somebody that'll hang around that's going to need something to eat. That's going to want something to eat. And sure enough, there was two children. Picture with me, dusty, dirty, El Naranjo. I don't even know. Ray, was there concrete floors back there, even in their homes? Probably not. Many of them were dirt floors. So you understand why these children were dusty and dirty. Because they lived in dust and dirt all the time. But I'm telling you all this because these were, 5, 7, 8-year-old, two children, a brother and a sister. And I couldn't talk any Spanish. Actually, I don't even know if Rodney was along. He would have been our only crutch. I offered them sandwiches, which they gladly took. But I'm saying all this that I was a little bit discontent with eating a sandwich, even though it was good and very filling, and it did its job. But these children did not know how to eat a sandwich. I know I told you this before. Hopefully it's long enough ago you forget. They held that sandwich, and they took it apart layer by layer and ate it. They did not know how to eat a sandwich. And all of a sudden, I became very content with the sandwich because I knew how to eat it. It was good food. They were not discontent with it, but I'm saying when I saw that the little that they had, and to them, eating a sandwich with us was a luxury. Anyhow, God wanted us to go to Honduras for that time to teach me lessons, which that's what he allows in many of our lives. Also, along with contentment, leaving the illustration, highlighting our lack fosters discontentment. If you see your lack, if you're always, not always, even semi-regularly, think about what you don't have that others have, it will foster discontentment, while thanksgiving promotes contentment. If you focus on what you have, I should have called my mother-in-law. She has this quote hanging up. Something about Thanksgiving. That anyhow, I'm not going to be able to say it. But Thanksgiving is such a great part, a major part of contentment. Well, I can see we're already out, running out. 1 Timothy 6, verses 6 to 8. But godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world, and it's certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us be therewith content. And we say, what does that mean? Is that really enough? For we brought nothing into this world. We don't know how much we had when we were born. We can only go by what we were told. But we've been around enough to have seen dead people to see what they take with them. It is certain that we can carry nothing out. Job 1:21 says, naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. He understood that he came with nothing and left with nothing. Again, I want to emphasize once more, contentment says that we are satisfied with what the Creator has allowed into our lives to take care of for him. That's how I'm tying contentment and stewardship together. Contentment says, I'm satisfied with what he has given me because it's what he wants me to take care of for him. Now, I wanted to go into quite a stretch here on probably the largest part was on materialism, because that is what the second part of this topic, the virtue, focuses on materialism. Materialism is a tendency to consider material things. Materialism is a tendency to consider material possessions and physical comforts as more important than spiritual values. And that's a dictionary definition. That is a natural inclination, because we are earthly beings and we have been born with the inclination to love ourselves more than anything else. And so we're going to tend to love things that we feel are better, make us better people, and we love them. Now, I'm going to quickly, we're not going to be able to read all these verses, but I'm going to read three verses out of Deuteronomy. These are not in the portion of the decrees that we read, but I believe it illustrates very clearly. It's the children of Israel, Deuteronomy 6:10-12, and it shall be, when the Lord thy God shall have brought thee into the land which he swore unto thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give thee great and goodly cities which thou buildest not, and houses full of all good things which thou fillest not, and wells digged which thou diggest not, vineyards and olive trees which thou plantest not, when thou shalt have eaten and be full, then beware lest thou forget the Lord which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. He says, when you get, and that is why materialism is such a huge threat for us in America, because we have so much. And he says, then beware. He says, when you have all these things, he says, when thou hast eaten and are full, then beware lest you're, and you know what? They did. And we don't have the time to read it, but I'm going to read one verse. He uses the word Jeshurun here, but it is still talking about Israel several chapters later. Sorry, I'm in the wrong chapter. Deuteronomy 32 and verse 15, but Jeshurun waxed fat and kicked. Thou art waxen fat, thou art grown thick, thou art covered with fatness. Then he forsook God which made him, and lightly esteemed the rock of his salvation. Jeshurun, Israel, you know what happened. They got to Canaan, and these things happened, and wickedness and idolatry all came in, and idol worship. And I was going to read that whole chapter of Deuteronomy 32. You can read that if you have spare time, but it is, they forgot God. And nothing has changed today. Material prosperity of God's people, whether Jews or Gentiles, have led countless away from him. Material prosperity has led countless away from him. We can talk about the Dutch Mennonites in Holland, how they went to Holland for religious freedom, but they ended up dying, and I don't have those numbers with me. I've done that study into that a number of a year ago, and their group, their worship size, their church size shrank exceedingly fast because material things drug them under. Will that be our story? The pursuit of material things will cause us to forget about God and the reason that he has created us in his kingdom in the first place. All right. 1 Timothy 6:9-12, you really should read that. It talks about the love of money is the root of all evil. And all I was going to say about that is, I would change that word. I don't think we're going to take it out of context, because if the love of money is the root of all evil, how did Adam and Eve sin? That's what one commentator said. I never thought of it that way before. because it wasn't love for money. And so when I read that verse now, I insert the word power there because money is power. America tells us that. I don't think I'm taking away from it, but the love of power is the root of all evil. And you just think about that sometime when you have time. The love of power is the root of all evil. Whether it's power to do things for myself, you name it. We could talk about the man in Luke 12 that the farmer that his crops yielded so well, and he said, "This will I do. I'm going to tear down my barns and build greater." He was a materialistic rich man. Let's just turn to Matthew 6 in closing. And I will take the time to read verses 19 to 24 quickly. Matthew chapter 6, this is part of the Sermon on the Mount. "Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. But if thine eye be evil, thy whole body shall be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in thee be darkness, how great is that darkness? No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." Number one, it tells us where to lay our treasure. It says, lay up treasure in heaven. And all I would say is, look where your heart is. What makes your heart tick? That is exactly where your treasure is. Number two, the righteous eye, the righteous single eye, will be full of a vision for God's kingdom, and that will affect what you do with your material things. The decree talked about giving. We obviously don't have time to go into that. It talks about strapping yourself with debt. The righteous single eye will be full of vision for God's kingdom. And number three, it tells us here in verse 24, no man can serve two masters, and we try it. America, American Christians, and there's more than just America, but we are so prone and so full of them here. We try and do that, serve two masters. We try and serve the heavenly master and try to serve the master of mammon. Which one do you love? It says you will either love the one, you can only love the one, and you will despise the other. Which one do you love? Which one do you despise? You cannot love both. Love for and devotion to the Creator are the antidote for the negative results that the Bible warns about on this topic. Let's kneel for prayer.